Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in that old original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and all that nasty selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of personal revival, aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us. Now, you can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322. Or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. And I really hope you pursue that and see if you can get your area to pick it up. America is experiencing change, if you can call it that, as the economy tanks, and our show is here to help you weather those changes. You can and will find a new security and a real prosperity by following the suggestions you hear here. Next week, we will be 1 hour later and directly follow the Steve and Vincent show. Steve talks about Ron Paul and the revolution nationally. On Off the Grids, our new name, you will find out how to take America back to its real roots in individual rights and local governance through what we call cooperative community. There's a lot that needs doing, and the people need to do it themselves. We'll be telling you their stories so that you can join in. So do contact your local station and ask them to carry this show. Your area will be better off for hearing it. And to do that, you just contact us at bbsradio.com. Also, be looking for our up-and-coming website, offthegrids.us, which will be the always-available source for the ideas that you hear here. All past shows become available as soon as it is humanly possible on the station archives. Now, my original blog site is titled How the Neocons Stole Freedom, and is conveniently located at howtheneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. The story at the top this week is titled Hillary, Ron Paul, and the End of Fascism. That's an exciting thought. Give it a read. It lets you in on things you should know about the corporate establishment but probably have missed. And now a few small news items. America's military supports Ron Paul. For the second time this year, active military have donated more to Ron than to any other presidential candidate. Ron is the one who has always stated unequivocally that he will get them out of Iraq. He's also the one they can trust to understand the real mission of the military and follow the Constitution before going to war. And members of the military all over the world, of course, Americans are concerned about that. But there's a group called Military Spouses for Change that are particularly concerned about that. And I'm about to read you a little article by Chelsea Hover that I thought was of interest. As most of the country watches the presidential debates from their living room, one group of military families at Fort Hood wants the candidates to come to them. Military Spouses for Change is trying to lure Democratic and Republican candidates to address the largest military community in the country face to face. These candidates are asking to be the next commander-in-chief. I feel like our families and service members, if nothing else, deserve an audience, organizer Cassandra Picard said. Picard's husband, Kanan, is home for now. He'll be deployed again to Iraq early next year. She and Military Spouses for Change have contacted almost every presidential candidate to participate in a bipartisan forum to address issues about the war and aftercare for veterans. If they are to come here, it would mean that the soldiers make a difference. The soldiers mean something. That their lives and their families mean something. That they're not just talking the talk, that they're actually going to make some changes and support the troops. Military wife and mother Inga Gunther said. Gunther's two sons and husband are currently active in the military. As the largest military installation in the country, many military families at Fort Hood feel the candidates owe it to them to answer questions on Iraq and veteran care. It is the defining issue for this election, but for military families, it defines our lives, Picard said. In a town where on average 2 soldiers a week are killed, Picard wants the nation to remember that for every soldier killed, there's a family left to pick up the pieces. None of the candidates have committed to the forum yet. Military Spouses for Change is still trying to secure a network and moderator for the event, which is tentatively scheduled for February 1st. The families of our military are speaking up, and that's a good thing. Ron, of course, is a former military himself, having been a military doctor, and he and his wife, Carol, understand just how wives and families feel about this war. I'm sure that Ron will be there for them. And in another note, yet another tasering of an American citizen, this time for refusing to sign a traffic ticket. This atrocity took place in Utah and was recorded on YouTube. And because of that, and I suspect only because of that, there is now an investigation going on. Evidently, the legal requirement for reading the accused's rights has been suspended in Utah, where the incident took place. Residents and travelers should take note. The name of the cop was Trooper John Gardner. Let's hope that the authorities up there fire him or send him and others like him to reform school. Now, for your own safety, remember to sign the ticket and then call ticketslayer.com, because today America is a police state, and so it's wise to exercise caution in all contexts with the authorities. And now, some thoughts for the week ahead. Off the grids is a direction that means more than just moving to a non-petroleum generator for your electric energy, though that's a great idea for all of us. It's also about a change of mind and a change of heart as well. Living off the grids is a refocus of values that includes living in community with an active attention to the needs of those around you. That builds a better world for all of us. Family does matter. You might wince at that. Sometimes families do disappoint us. We all know that. But family can be restored, trust reestablished, and love renewed. It can happen even when you have given up on every single last one of them. Most things in life, of course, are temporary, but a few things, those that matter most, are forever. When you focus on the things that last because they're not material, you will find that your life is enriched in unsuspected ways. It is the people and the relationships that nourish us emotionally. What was the last time you cried at a movie over a car or a neat new cell phone you shelled out so much money to possess? You know what I mean. Stories of human courage, sacrifice for someone you love beyond reason, a glimpse of things that nourish your soul. The last time you spoke to your father before he died. Those heart-binding events and feelings, those are the things that stay with you. Money can't buy them. But grasping for those things instead of investing in your family and friends leaves you hollow and empty when all is said and done. If you live with love, then love will find you, coming back to you in unimaginable ways. So what does that have to do with getting off the grids? Getting off the grids is an opportunity to refocus. Because getting off the grids for each of us is going to be a long revolution. It's a moment for each of us in time that's going to take us from a place where we're really enslaved to things and forced dependence on rulers to a place of self-actualizing knowledge and understanding that we are individually free. America began as a vision, and that's a vision that brings us all together. But it's through our communities and families that that takes place. So this is an exciting time because individuals are coming together, finding that they have the same goals and ideas. And astonishingly enough, they're beginning to work together to build the needed tools that allow us to move into that new world that's so full of promise and hope. Every day, and I'm always amazed, I find more people doing really great things that move us back toward local community. And you'll be hearing more and more about those things here from now on. Some of those tools come into our hands through innovations in technology, and some come to us from the distant past, now seen through different eyes. Those tools hold the potential for restoring the earth and help in rebuilding a human world that's about consent, persuasion, and simple decency. Our guest tonight is going to talk about one tool that helps us climb off the grids. Augustus Franklin has been on a lifelong journey toward just this moment in time, looking for answers to questions. Now, questions can be funny things. They can take you to answers you didn't know you needed and that you didn't even ask. Mr. Franklin is an astrophysicist and a scientist who has worked as a chief science officer in high-tech business and for Jet Propulsion Laboratory. Mr. Franklin discovered the formula now in use for reforesting Haiti over 5 years ago and has been involved in clinical testing since then. And he's a really committed guy. He's committed to seeing the Earth return to its original condition and to giving all of us, each and every one, the nourishment that we need to prosper. Please welcome Augustus Franklin. Are you there?
Yes, I am, Melinda. Nice to be here tonight.
Well, I am so glad that you could be with us to talk about something so exciting about the Earth and about the world that we are going to be living in, necessarily.
Well, I live in a beautiful place, and as I sit here this afternoon, I look out over the Sequoia National Forest, carpeted with big sequoia trees, and one of those last few places where nature still commands man, as if it never had, but we have put our oil-soaked foot all over it, it seems.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, oil is not good for any of us. It's very toxic.
Well, you know, it's funny. If you look in the ancient texts, there were three things that our creators told us not to touch that were only theirs: gold, silver, and oil. And we've touched all of them.
Oh, my gosh. We weren't supposed to touch gold?
Nope.
Where is that?
Well, that's part of their immortality secret.
Oh. Well, that's interesting. That's kind of disturbing, actually.
Well, yes and yes and yes, as a matter of fact.
But, well, that's something we've actually never talked about, so that's really interesting. We're going to have to get into that.
Well, I did 3 years of archaeoastronomy in Chicago when I was sabbatical after Space Station. I was one of the designers. And I came across a lot of discomforting things that I read from the ancient record.
Mm-hmm.
Also, a few very comforting things, one of which I've advanced forward with friends of mine out on the East Coast and other places that can bring these nutrients back into our soil, which I think can solve some really, really big problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's for sure. Because returning, I know you have said, returning the minerals to the soil is one of the things we need to do to just come back into balance with nature.
Well, you know, in a very, very poignant way, the whole terrorism manufactured war is really a way to sustain the oil revenues of the Saudi Arabians and the Bush family and so forth and so on. And that's never more evident than the raising of corn in this country, which is completely based on fossil fuels and their byproducts, as opposed to using solar energy and just natural grasses.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, that brings us to an interesting point, because when you think about corn, you think about something that's, you know, very natural, the Indians ate it, and we eat it, but it's not really the same thing at all, is it?
Well, you know, it's funny. ZMAs was found by ancient cultures. A particular mutation occurred where the male parts of the plants were high up in the plant, and the female parts were high up in the plant. The male parts were high up, and the female parts were low down in the plant, as opposed to every other plant where the pollen is usually lower on the plant. And it allowed the growth of a large amount of kernels on the fruit. This, in turn, has created an industry based off of increasing the yield of these plants, which essentially has introduced ammonium nitrate, which was a material used to make bombs during the Second World War and First World War,
mm-hmm.
and other chemicals that were then later introduced to agriculture when war ended, supposedly. And fertilizers were introduced off mm-hmm. of ammonium nitrate.
Yes. And one of the things that you found from what you were doing was that most of the minerals aren't actually returned to the soil, right?
Well, when you put nitrogen, potassium, and phosphorus on soil over time, it will force plants to grow. It will force more plants to grow on an area of land that naturally wouldn't grow there. And at the same time, plants require microminerals. So as the nitrogen and potassium is forced onto the plant strips the soil of all the micronutrients it can possibly get, and then you get a reduction of nutrient over time. Now, of course, this makes weaker plants because they don't have the nutrients to keep themselves healthy, which then produces an exploitable population of food for the predators, which are bugs and bacteria, which then, of course, introduce the chemical chemical pesticides and herbicides to control the bugs, which, of course, kill even more micronutrients, which are there in the soil to break down the rock, because plants really represent the bridge between the rocks and the man. So if you end up destroying the foundation, you end up destroying the nutrition, and then we see these eruptions of vitamin companies and medicines to fix the things that happen in us because we're not getting our nutrient in our food any longer.
So you're saying that takes us out of balance with nature.
Absolutely.
And that we were completely oblivious. We thought we could actually very arrogantly re-engineer nature without even understanding it.
Well, there were three deadly steps. If you'd like to hear them, I'd love to talk about
them. Oh, please.
Well, the first step was the synthesis of ammonium nitrate for weapons from natural gas after World War II, and they found a new market to increase the food production by introducing it as a high NPK nitrogen application to grow vast amounts of food crops, mostly corn.
So from death and war.
Yeah, they just extended it in a weird way. And then as the ammonium nitrate began killing the soil, because these things disrupt the balance and kill the micronutrients or the microorganisms, the crops were very plentiful, allowing the chemical industry basically to hide their work, but that work weakened the plants.
Mm-hmm.
Essential nutrients were stripped out by only using NPK while not replenishing this trace elements. This allowed the predators to target the weakened plants because this fertilization and harvesting practice stripped the soil of the remaining essential micronutrients. Rock was no longer able to be processed by the dwindling microorganism population, and the stage was set for industrial chemical factory farming.
Mm-hmm.
Then step three was then petrochemical, based herbicides, pesticides, and fungicides had to be applied to deal with the petroleum or the problem of predatory organisms due to the nutrient-deprived weakened plants, which exterminated the bugs, the diseases, and also the rest of the microorganisms, putting everything out of nature's balance, creating a strong predator organisms and addicting agriculture to more powerful poisonous products of the oil companies.
Now, you used a term here, a predator, talking about something that's like a wolf, but instead about an insect.
Well, you have to imagine the predators, be them wolves or lions or bugs, they seek the weakest, and they always cull the weakest out of the crop or the herd. And in this respect, our plants have become weak, and they become sickly. And we've coated them with chemicals, and we end up eating those chemicals, and then we become weak, and then we have to take chemicals. It's a very vicious cycle, and it's been hidden by the FDA and the USDA and Monsanto and ADM and Cargill and all these companies that want to force these products into our food supply because of this overproduction of corn, and we end up with all these various problems.
Mm-hmm.
It's all basically based on this petroleum industry, this petroleum culture that we've created. And this is the sort of thing that I want to stop.
Well, and I think that most people don't even realize just how prevalent petroleum is in the food, associated with the food that they put in their mouths.
Well, people are very trusting. I mean, they want to believe that their leaders are representing their best interests, but typically, I'm sure most of our listeners have seen that most of our leaders are put in place by special interest groups and with big money by those special interest groups, and they have to pay that money back in one way or another, and usually it's by enacting dubious reforms to agriculture and society that service the industry instead of the humans that they are supposed to represent.
That's true. I mean, we all know that happens, but you don't necessarily think about the ramifications there.
Well, again, the idea was as populations increased. I mean, in some ways, the first revolution in agriculture was this production of ammonium nitrate to increase the yields of food. But by being cheap and worrying about the bottom line and their investors, they didn't bother putting the micronutrients back in.
Well, did they know how?
Well, I think they probably did. I mean, there's a wonderful farm called Polyface Farm over in Virginia that has a completely sustainable farm environment that operates, different animals and different functions that replenish the soil. grows great crops, and works on solar energy. They don't use any petrochemicals.
So people have known how to do that, and they do it the natural ways, which is, you know, moving things around so that one thing renews the other.
Well, yeah. And, you know, Rodale, you know, wrote the organic gardening manuals, essentially, and he was an agronomist from England, and it's brilliant work, but that's been perverted by these same industries to take organic, legally own the name, invent all kinds of laws and regulations to be able to grow organically. But if you look at the products, for instance, you know, Newman, Paul Newman makes some great products, but some of his products have high fructose corn syrup in it.
And that has a really horrible effect.
Which it isn't. I mean, high fructose corn syrup is a three-step chemical process of digesting cornstarch into a thick, liquid, concentrated sugar, which isn't detected by the human gut as regular sugar, like cane sugar. And we don't get the chemical messages to stop eating this stuff, so we eat more and more, which again allows the industry to force these products, this huge overproduction of corn and its byproducts, into the food supply. And it destroys the thyroid, just like it destroys the thyroid in pigs and cows by corn feeding them. And we end up with obesity and type 2 diabetes, which is an interesting term in itself. What type 2 diabetes used to be called was childhood diabetes. And and these kids are, you know, half of our society is at risk at any given time of going into a diabetic state and having to go on to insulin, which, of course, feeds the chemical industry. I mean, it's just such a circuitous, evil action. It's just, it's amazing that people haven't taken their head out of the sand to take a look at what's being done to them. But again, America believes that its leaders are representing them.
And what you're saying here is that diabetes is actually a created disease.
Well, not in all respects, but in type 2 diabetes, it's specifically from burning out the Langerhans cells in the pancreas by the introduction of too high of a concentration of sugar in all products. And if you look at your sports drinks, you'll find high fructose corn syrup. They present it as though it's fructose, which is a naturally occurring sugar in fruits, but it's really not. And you have a whole industry that has agents and lobbyists that make sure that the FDA and the media doesn't release to the public the facts.
So that goes to what they do with the media and the fact
an enormously complex problem.
Yes, but what you're actually, one of the things that you're talking about here is letting the people know exactly how they're being manipulated, this is being done to them, and then producing for them an alternative.
Well, again, you know, if people were more aware of what was really being done with the overproduction of corn and the use of petrochemicals to grow that corn, I mean, the ratio is very strange. It takes 2 calories worth of energy from petroleum to produce 1 calorie worth of energy from corn. So right off the bat, that's a negative, you know, condition that's occurring. It's not good. And it addicts us to these foreign sources of energy when the best source of energy rises in the east and sets in the west every day.
Well, that's certainly true, and plants suck it up like crazy.
Well, a good example is the beef grown in Argentina, which is all grown on grass. And beef in this country is grown on grass to produce a healthy animal. Then about 150 days before they're slaughtered, they're put in feedlots that are loaded with manure, loaded with E. coli, disgusting, you know, water that they have available to them, and they're fed these foods that produce an acidosis in the animal. The rumen, the actual stomach of the cow, when it processes grass, is a neutral pH. It's pH 7. But E. coli likes to exist in a very high pH, which is, you know, like pH 3 and 4. And so you end up with this E. coli growing in the gut of animals. And after about 150 days, you get these bacteria in the stomach penetrating the intestinal wall, the stomach wall, into the bloodstream, and it ends up in the liver, causing liver abscesses. And about 70% of the feedlot cattle have liver abscesses.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, then they feed them antibiotics to cure that, and the antibiotics are in the food. And, you know, the doctors say that if they fed cattle grass, they wouldn't have a job at these feedlots. And any longer than 150 days, these animals would die because they're not set up to eat corn.
So you're saying that the beef that we eat is for the most part diseased and that they've actually created the diseases in the animals?
Well, yeah. They found out that if you take a feedlot animal that's suffering from bloat and all these conditions and E. coli in the gut, if you put them on grass for just a few days, that all stops. It goes away.
Because they want to be healthy. Their body wants them to be healthy.
Well, Jim Russell is a USDA microbiologist at Cornell. And he says that switching to grass from corn for just a few days reduces the E. coli population by 80%. But this is considered wildly impractical by the cattle industry and subsequently their agents in the USDA. And instead, they'd rather irradiate the meat with radioactive, you know, elements.
Radioactive elements?
Oh, yeah. They irradiate the meat to kill the bugs, which then structurally damages the tissue and increases the likelihood of carcinogenic toxins in the food supply.
Oh, well, that's just charming.
Well, you know, it's...
It doesn't say that when you go buy the hamburger at the store.
Yeah, it doesn't say that in the organic stuff either.
You know, they do it to the organic stuff,
too? Organically raised cattle that goes to a feedlot and fed corn is really not so organic.
Well, yes. And, of course, we use the word organic like it's some sort of little mantra that it's going to keep us all healthy.
Well, it's been co-opted by industry, and it's been co-opted by very professional Madison Avenue writers to give you these warm, fuzzy feelings in, like, Whole Foods and places like that, when, in fact, if you went to the farms and saw how these animals and chickens were raised, they'll, for instance, they'll say the chicken is able to have a natural environment where it has free range. Well, actually, a few weeks before it's slaughtered, there's a little door in this coop of a building with 20,000 chickens in it, and they go out to a little area where they can scratch around. And that's not quite how they present it in the... But that's not quite how it is compared to how they present it in the advertising. You know,
really?
It's terrible what they're doing, but really the whole organic movement is being seduced by industry to think they're getting a better food. They're still getting all these corn products put in the food.
Do they think they're getting a better product, or do they think they're making more money?
Well, if you've ever priced organic food in the grocery store, it's a lot more expensive than factory farming food, isn't it?
Well, and you buy it because you think it's better for you, but from what you're saying, it isn't.
Well, you know, corn and soy, these are polyunsaturated oils. And in Iowa, for instance, and in the Corn Belt, they swap out soybeans and corn in these varying, you know, swapping raising. It's called rotating crops. But both of these things are polyunsaturates. And both of these things reduce the function of the thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 60 years ago, paints and varnishes were made of soy oil, safflower oil, linseed oil. You know, petrochemical chemists working in the oil production industry in the late 40s discovered that oil-based chemical toxins fed to pigs suppressed the thyroid function. The suppression made them get fatter while consuming less food, as the
Uh-oh.
Body essentially tried to gather these toxins and put them someplace in fat cells. But, you know, but they found out that their meat was found to be carcinogenic. But then it was discovered that corn and soybeans had the same anti-thyroid effect, causing the animals to be fattened at a much lower cost. The animals became fat. But also the fat becomes chemically similar to the chemicals in the fats in their food, which are these, you know, antibiotics and all the other stuff they feed them during the corn fattening, and cause them to create it was equally toxic fat, but it wasn't carcinogenic, so the FDA says, safe, you can go ahead and eat it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's safe?
Well, you know, it's...
What else are they telling us that's not true?
Probably a lot. I mean, these same scientists working in the oil industry then showed... You know, chemists how to make paint from petroleum distillates, which was cheaper than the vegetable and seed oils, because you know, they gave them all kinds of breaks and prices to get rid of these byproducts of petroleum distillation.
So we're eating this food that really isn't good for us, and I'm sure that the politicians who decided this was a swell idea had reasons for voting that way.
Well, they had lobbyists, and they had industry. And what did I say earlier about our representatives taking money to get elected?
Oh, yes.
You know, there's a direct correlation between this. So when you look at Hillary and you look at Giuliani and you look at Romney, you can't look at these candidates. You got to look at the people investing in these candidates and what they're going to benefit by putting these people in office.
Yeah, they call it bundling, you know.
Well, that's a good word for it.
Yes, of course, it's not, you know, sort of sweet and, you know, the courting that used to take place as bundling for, like, the Puritans. That was just personal. This is like bundling up your money so that you can afford a better politician. And that they're for, you know, do you think they come with price tags?
I think the price is too high to pay, actually.
Well, you know, certainly not, it seems, for these companies.
Well, here's a little message for your listeners, okay? When kids drink these drinks, these high fructose corn syrup drinks, what happens is the pancreas immediately responds by bursting a whole bunch of insulin out to take the sugars out of the bloodstream, because they'll go into sugar coma and they'll die.
Mm-hmm.
So they start plugging them into cells because sugars are naturally available in foods to plug into cells for energy. But some of these insulin molecules grab the sugar and plug it into a nerve cell in the brain. And then the brain squirts out a bunch of serotonin. So if you've ever been to a McDonald's or a Wendy's or something like that, and you drink these supersized drinks, you get this enormous happy burst from drinking this. Then you have a sugar crash a little while later. What's actually occurring is a chemical depletion of the serotonin. Mm. And when kids do this long enough, okay, not only are they fattening up their bodies as these sugars are put in fat cells, they're destroying the ability of the body to have a normal mood, and they get depressed. Do the parents or the doctors tell them to get off these high fructose corn syrups? Nah. They say, here, have this big supersized drink and take this, the antidepressant drugs.
Oh, my heavens.
You know, and then the kids, it moderates their behavior for a while because they chemically start moderating the brain activity. But then the kids get, like, very depressed and very almost suicidal. And you end up with this even worse problem instead of just taking the kid off these high-density sugars.
Well, because they wouldn't be able to afford, they wouldn't be able to charge you for that.
And they couldn't move as much corn into the society food supply, could they?
Well, no, they couldn't. You can certainly see what the motive is.
It's all about overproduction of corn to be able to force more use of petrochemicals. And more use of petrochemicals means more use of pesticides and herbicides and ammonium nitrate, which means more food supply of corn, more corn products that have to move overseas into other food supplies, not just ours,
mm-hmm.
and into our kids.
That's just horrifying when you think about it. How much petroleum is in, like, every pound of meat we eat in these terms?
Well, you know, if you add together the natural gas and the fertilizers to the fossil fuels to make the pesticides, drive the tractors, harvest, dry, and transport the corn, you'll find that every bushel of corn takes between a quart and a half gallon of oil per acre.
Oh, my heavens.
More than that. That's a conservative effort.
And, of course, that's all things that are, that's fuel, that's things that are burned and go into the atmosphere.
Well, or into our bodies. I mean, why don't we just drink the oil?
Oh, well, that's a disgusting thought.
Well, that's what we're doing when we have all these bizarre corn byproducts that are forced into us in the food supply. And if you go into any store, you'll see modified vegetable protein. You'll see maltodextrin, all these things that you don't understand what they are in the ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
You think are nutrients. They're actually byproducts of oil to prevent separation of the oils, to present, to allow, things to flow better, to prevent oxidation. And these are big chemicals that are very, very hard on the body and very, very hard to process. And they end up in your cells. And your cells end up dealing with them to the point where they can't deal with them anymore. And then they go mutagenic and you get cancers. And because there's this culpable deniability about, well, it wasn't us that did it, it must have been these other things, you know. This whole thing about, well, we have a more sedentary lifestyle.
Right.
I don't think so. You know?
So what they're doing is essentially we're having to pay to be poisoned to death.
Remember the movie Supersize It?
Yes, I do.
What happened
really
to the
horrifying
guy when he forced himself to eat these foods three times a day for about a month? His liver was malfunctioning. He was gaining tons of weight. His doctor said, look, I don't care what this thing you're trying to do for your documentary is, it's going to kill you. You got to get off these things. Now, let's go back to what I said about feedlot cattle. If the cattle stay on these corn products longer than 150 days, their livers get abscesses and they risk death. But they usually kill them before they get into liver death.
But, of course, with us, what happens is that we become another stream of income to the medical industry.
Well, we live a lot longer than 150 days on these products, don't we?
And we do. We must be awfully hardy.
You know, so, you know, my suggestion is, you know, is just try it. Try to go off of all corn products and all corn additives and all corn, you know, materials and stuff in these foods just to see how you feel. Your thyroid will probably rebound. You'll probably lose a lot of weight. You'll probably have more energy. And what happens when you deplete your serotonin, and this is very critical that people have to understand, there's a series of chemical steps. It's called acetylation and methylation of serotonin to create melatonin.
Mm-hmm.
Melatonin is produced in the pineal gland if you have adequate amounts of serotonin. If you're depleting the serotonin because you've been bursting it with these high fructose corn syrups, you don't get melatonin built in the pineal gland. If the pineal gland doesn't release melatonin when you're in deep sleep, your hypothalamus doesn't get the message because that's That comes from melatonin.
Mm-hmm.
They're releasing factors to the pituitary gland to release the pituitary glands during sleep, so you get fixed. You don't go into deep sleep. You end up waking up unrested. You end up more fatigued, more depressed, and you start going on the antidepressants even more.
My God, I mean, the picture you're painting is very frightening.
It's almost Frankensteinian, isn't it?
It is, absolutely.
You know, so when you talk about these politicians that supposedly are representing our interests, you know, I haven't seen any except maybe Ron Paul, and I'm watching him too. I mean, I like the guy immensely, and I don't see any bundling on him, which is good. But as you say,
yes.
But again, we have to have people that represent the interests of the health and welfare of the nation. And as a descendant of Benjamin Franklin, I have a vested interest in making sure these things happen.
Mm-hmm. That's right, because you are. You're descended from Benjamin Franklin.
Ninth generation direct descendant.
Well, and that certainly would give you an interest in what is going on.
Well, and probably why I'm so, just like, you know, Dr. Franklin was, so suspicious of the actions of those in office.
Well, you can see why you would be, because if you would, the picture you've just painted, at each point, you can see how they're profiting from what they're selling you.
And what they're preventing you from learning about.
Yes, exactly.
It's education. Melinda, at its very heart, this is education.
Mm-hmm.
And like any theory, any ideas, if you don't have the necessary information to draw your conclusions from, how valid are your conclusions?
Well, they can't be.
Precisely. So if we have an industry that gives money to high schools to sell Doritos and fatty corn products in the high schools, and the high schools are so underfunded because the politicians need to support the industries that are making these products that then fund the high schools, how is it servicing our children when we end up with these foods being fed to our kids that don't sleep well at night, are fatigued and can't concentrate and learn? How is that helping education at all?
Well, of course, it leads you to the question of whether or not it's actually their intention to help kids learn, or whether or not they simply would like to process them through as a la Soylent Green, which is the picture you're painting.
Well, you know, Henry Kissinger referred to us as cattle. Maybe there's something to that.
Well, that's a scary thought, because everything about him is rather scary, including the way he looks. Well, this is a really scary picture, but there are some things happening right now that we've been talking about that are much more positive. For instance, what you've come up with.
Well, again, you know, you have to identify the problem before you can come up to a solution.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just throw ideas out there and hope to fix something if you don't know what to fix.
That's
so the
true.
Idea here is to get farming back to a decentralized farming and localized agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So people don't have to buy food that's picked unripe and hard, that rots on the way to the grocery store, turns color, is manufactured and genetically modified to make the shipping trip for the sake of industry and not our nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, get yourself into a neighborhood, get yourself into a local gardening co-op. A really good example is Nature's Harvest over in Paso Robles.
Mm-hmm.
Melanie over there operates a great operation, and what it does, it provides baskets.
Mm-hmm.
Every week you can go in and she'll fill the basket up with different vegetables and herbs and stuff that you need to feed you every week. And she thought she could make this fly on maybe 15, 20 baskets a week. I think she's up to about 75 or 80 a week now.
Wow.
People want this. And it can work everywhere. You know, it just takes being able to get people out there growing the foods.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the soil doesn't have the nutrients that we need to grow really, really super healthy food. Even if you go back to a natural method and putting compost back in, geologic variation determines that you're not going to get all 14 of the essential micronutrients above NPK. There's actually 17 counting NPK.
And that's why you came up with your plant food.
It assures the plants get everything they possibly need. And we get bigger leaves, bigger nuts, bigger berries, bigger food, better taste, better fragrant flowers, better, you know, aromatic herbs. It just shows that if you actually help nature out a little bit, that you rebound the soil micromineral or microorganisms, which then do all the work. Let nature do the work. What we're trying to do here is at one point, you know, my company will be out of business.
And that's what you want.
Because what that means is our soils have been replenished. We've done our job. It's
mm-hmm.
not to make money. It's this mission. So, I mean, it sounds bizarre, but my mission is to go out of business.
Well, that's a good thing, though.
Well,
because when people don't need it, they're going to be healthier.
Well, if people are healthier and happier and more productive, then other things are possible.
Mm-hmm.
But if they keep addicted to these problems and they're constantly being slaves to this grid system, which I've talked to you about extensively and I totally agree with, it's time to opt out.
Mm-hmm.
And before they make laws where it's, you know, not legal to opt out, we need to opt out now.
And that's, of course, a point. One of the things that we've seen happen with using the word organic the way that they do is that they're trying to complicate the issue and make it more difficult for people to identify ways that they can climb off the food grid and become healthy.
Well, remember, the food grid is actually a three-tier system. The microorganisms need the same minerals that the plants need. The plants need the same minerals that we need. We can't eat rocks. The microorganisms process that for us.
Mm-hmm.
But depending on the geologic characteristic of the rocks they're digesting, they may only have 9 or 10 of the 14 or even less. But if you help them grow to the point where you're adding these micronutrients in, you've got these extra ones in there that helps them rebound.
Mm-hmm.
So you have the three tiers is the microorganisms, the stuff below the soil, the stuff that grows out of the soil, and the animals that walk around on top of the soil.
Mm-hmm.
And they all need the same nutrients. So when you restrict any of those nutrients, you end up making everything suffer except the Persian Gulf or Canadian oil or Venezuelan oil or Iranian oil or any of the other places that are producing oil in this sick society we have, which is sick from petroleum.
So we're toxic with petroleum.
Well, you
in
know,
our
Creator said, "Don't take the oil out of the ground." So just from the very get-go, if you listen to the ancient record and you listen to what was left to us by our Creator, it says, "Look, there was probably reasons why that was left, you know, but we have free choice, and sometimes our choices aren't very well advised."
That's really bizarre, though. I've never heard that, and it's amazing.
Yeah.
There's so many people, they read the Bible and read it, but I've never heard that before.
Well, it's like any book. Everybody's going to get something different from the same words.
Well, that's for sure. And let's just move on to another point that I'd like you to talk about a little bit.
Sure.
Now, the formula that you've come up with is actually being used already. There are people growing food with it out there. And in Haiti, where they had terribly stripped the soil, it's being used to rebuild the forests there.
Exactly. Pastor Pierre has a congregation in Haiti, and the hurricanes came through there and just wiped out whole areas of forest, just deforested it. And the ground, again, is it's just lacking a lot of micronutrients. And so he called me up, and he said, "I heard about this stuff you're doing." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, is there any way that we could buy it?" And I said, "Well, I actually have a nonprofit called the International Green Cross, and it sounds to me like this is a perfect application for providing these materials that I sell commercially to you free
mm-hmm.
because of the humanitarian effort." And I sent him about, 10 gallons of concentrate, which makes about 3,500 gallons of application mat.
Wow, that's a lot.
It's very efficient because it takes little to ship it, which is good for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I paid for shipping and got that down to him. And they're reforesting the area in all kinds of different natural flora that grows in the area. They've started these plants, and they're doing very healthy and very well. And he is going to increase that project based on the success of the using this material because it makes plants grow healthier and stronger quicker. So we're looking for some really nice results down in Haiti, maybe even a reduction in the problem of hunger down there and food production.
Mm-hmm.
And allowing them, again, to rebuild their soil so their microorganisms rebound, and they have a nice biodiverse soil structure. Hopefully they won't be asking for any more. Not that I wouldn't give it to them.
Well, yes, but
that just means that it's been successful. The earth has been, you know, returned to where it needs to be, and they can work on solar energy.
Have you ever thought about somehow letting people buy it so that they could reforest the rest of the world too?
Well, of course. And as these projects, you know, get some notoriety, that we hope to be able to get some grant fundings from like Bill Gates and people like that have lots of money for these kind of projects. to help, you know, defray some of the costs of getting these things to some of these damaged areas. You know, with Katrina, we had, you know, damaged wetlands. With these things happening in Bangladesh, there's a huge effort now that needs to be addressed to restore crops and restore, you know, food for those people. We're hoping that some of these organizations get a hold of this.
Mm-hmm. But people can actually just get it and use it themselves now because you're making it available in sort of a more commercial form.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we've got three different types for, you know, for orchids and aquaculture and hydroponics and soil. And we hope to be able to show people that, you know, this will fix hurt and dying plants and give more nutrition to their normal crops and better taste. I mean, I eat food because it tastes good. I mean, I know that it's important to be, you know, getting your nutrients in your food because there's cofactors and enzymes you don't get in mononutrients like in vitamins. And they all work in synergy with each other in the natural sources.
Mm-hmm.
An example. You get these, people have this, like, situation where they will have a low blood sugar and they'll drink like a Coca-Cola to get the blood sugar up. But it causes this huge burst of insulin from the pancreas. But if you just eat some fruit, you don't get that burst. It says that, you know, food, natural sources of sweeteners, are so much healthier on the organs.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another action, too. You got to remember that in this society, people entering their 70s and 80s have macular degeneration, they have kidney failure, renal failure, and they have pancreatic failure.
And, of course, that's running up the cost for our medical,
yes,
for every one of us.
But it's also because of this enormous amount of sugar you're processing, producing an enormous amount of insulin. And the insulin is wearing out the receptor sites. I've known diabetics that have gone into near sugar coma and given insulin, and they haven't been, and the insulin hasn't been able to do any good because the insulin receptor sites have been so eroded from overuse by the insulin that's been produced that even injected insulin can't take the sugar out of the bloodstream.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yeah. It is so bad. You know, and people are not told this, and people are not educated on this. And I have to imagine that at one point or another, at some level of industry and society and government, that they don't want people to know.
Well, it certainly sounds like it, because has anybody ever calculated exactly how much money they make by making us sick?
I haven't done those numbers. You know, I'm so busy trying to just, you know, fix the soil. There's just so much time in the day.
Well, that's for sure. But you can see how somebody should probably do that. That would be very worthwhile.
Well, one of the things that our minerals have is you know, good amounts of a correct ratio of magnesium and calcium.
Mm-hmm.
And these are essential minerals in the plant to produce tissues in the plant. You know, for instance, manganese, magnesium, and iron form chlorophyll to power the chloroplast. And the chloroplasts are about 500,000 per square millimeter in a leaf. And what we've seen is double and triple the size of leaves, which means you've got double and triple the size of chloroplasts. And these are the chemical pharmaceutical factories in nature.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're providing more factories with more nutrients, they make more phytochemicals.
So you have these little plant factories that are doing much better. They're sort of fulfilling their, you know, potential DNA there.
Well, there's many more of them.
Wow.
If you can increase the number, you increase the nutrient content, the nutrient density. And it all comes in colors. I mean, your anthocyanins are the reds in food. Your carotenoids and flavonoids are your yellows and oranges. Your resveratrol are your purples. Your chlorophylls are green. I mean, all the colors of the rainbow are all the colors in your phytochemicals. If you don't see them in your food, you're not getting them into your stomach.
And, of course, then you can't have the benefit of them so that your food can't nourish you.
That's right. There you go.
And that's really an amazing story. I mean, it's mind-boggling that this could be happening to us and that they know it and that they're continuing to do it anyway.
It's simple. It doesn't take supporting the petrochemical industry. It doesn't support the genetic modification industry. It doesn't support the using E. coli gene sequences to modify cell industry. Okay, all it takes is putting the right nutrients back in the soil that have been stripped out by these bizarre processes by industry.
Mm-hmm.
The simple solution is to stop industry, but not stop food production. Just make it localized. Decentralize it. Don't make it so that you have to pick food unripe to make it to the store. Instead of going to your local grocery store, for your fresh fruits and vegetables, go to your local grower. Encourage the grocery stores to buy locally grown food.
And there are people, there's always places where you can get that if you go look for it.
Well, think of the small farmer that's been put out of business by these huge factory farming operations that deliver inappropriate and non-nutritional food.
Well, that's a scary and depressing thought, too.
Well, because you know what? My fellow citizens deserve to stay in business. My fellow citizens deserve to make a living in America. And when China and Japan and these other countries come over here and buy these huge tracts of land to grow factory farms to provide the nation, my fellow citizens, these foods that don't feed us, that end up requiring us to buy chemicals and pharmaceuticals and vitamin supplements from companies that are owned by foreign countries, I see a big problem with globalization.
And, of course, your solution is to take the production of food back local so that people are, one, growing much more of their own food.
Well, that
and
is fun
the
to grow
same
plants.
Time.
I mean, you can grow plants in pots on your patio in the city.
Mm-hmm.
If you have the nutrients to grow nutritious plants, you can supplement your food intake with healthy food.
And you could actually use this in your sprouts. So all you'd really need was a sprouting tray.
Oh, yeah, and sprouts come up faster and better, too, with this stuff. If you
mm-hmm.
give the nutrient to the sprouts, the plant responds.
It's, boom, just like that, huh?
It's looking for nutrients. If you give it to it, it's happy.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Planting is fun. We were once an agrarian society. Jefferson and all these guys, they all grew plants. They all ate plants. They all ate the plants they grew. They traded them. They bartered them. You know, if someone didn't do chickens over here, but someone had a whole bunch of squash, they'd trade. I mean, they do a barter system. You don't need cash.
Well, it's probably a good thing, given what's happening.
You know, you need to have an organized community that's disorganized from the central federal government, and you need to be able to fund the people and support the people that are supporting you and have this community cooperative. That's not socialism. That's not communism. That's Americanism.
Amen. That's so true. Could you please give people your email address so they can get in touch with you?
Yeah. FranklinForPresident@yahoo.com.
FranklinForPresident@yahoo.com. Well, nobody will have a hard time remembering that.
Well, what I've done is I've put a bunch of videos up on YouTube that if I was running for president, you know, these are some of the ways I'd fix some of these problems kind of thing.
That's cute. I like
that. And it's not as though I'm really a candidate. You know, I support Ron Paul. But, you know, everybody, and I don't care who you are, if you're an American citizen, you have the right to run for office of president. You don't need a $4 million entrance fee to play that game.
Amen.
You need to be able to say, I've got some ideas. I'm going to put them up there. If people like them, they'll put me where they need to put me. If they don't like them, they can go to the next guy. But you've got to be able to have what the framers thought of at the beginning, the right as a citizen to represent your local government, and your national government.
Now, that's so true. Well, thank you so much for being with us today.
I'm glad I could come.
And we'll be hearing from you again soon. You take care. God bless.
You too.
And that's our show for today, Friday, November 23rd, 2007. Know the truth, and the truth will set you free in. Make your energy needs free. The earth nourishes us, and we should be good to the earth in turn. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundations on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, It is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that eventually will bring us to freedom, and may God